Welcome back to The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 484, a boy, a dad, and a fort. I'm going to tell you the story about my fort in this podcast. You know, one of the biggest challenges for growing businesses is not even necessarily management or accounting or goal setting. It's how you show your clients how much they are appreciated. And there's a standard set of things that companies do. You can take them to lunch or dinner. You can arrange some kind of fishing trip. You can send baubles with your company name on it, which a lot of companies do, and they end up, you know, in the garbage or in a desk drawer someplace. Or, you know, here in Minnesota, people will do the boat trips on Minnetonka or on the river, that kind of thing. And if you are doing business in the state of Minnesota, these are pretty much the way it is. You know, so trying to find something new and different can be difficult. So I'm going to suggest something that is different, that is social, and that is memorable. And this gives you an opportunity to socialize and bond with your clients who are doing something really fun and are also creating something unique at Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. Brush Studio events are held in a relaxed social setting. An artist guides your clients and your friends through the featured painting step by step. There's no experience necessary. And the fact is, your clients are going to be amazed at what they're able to create. But it isn't even about creativity or painting or anything else. It's about socializing and working together. They've got room for 55 people plus catering from Crave in the West End. And Brush Studio features over 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. So we're talking about a fun and sophisticated way to create a new bonding experience that your clients are never going to forget, and they'll love you for it, especially for clients that want to make a date night out of it because it's something they can share with their family. So here's what you do. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page or visit brushstudio.net. You can also reach out to Brush Studio 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. Well, this story comes from one of those moments when I was sitting quietly and drinking my coffee early in the morning at some point last week. And it's interesting because it's kind of a departure from politics. As I said in previous podcasts, I don't need to go into it. I'm not going to go into it for this one, and I really shouldn't even say this because it kills the mood that we won't really know much until the next waypoint. So listen to podcast 483 and 482 to really understand what I'm talking about. But the themes of this story are the desire for independence, and think about your first experience, whether you're a man or a woman. Think about your first experience with pure independence. Another theme would be manifesting goals by accepting help. But really, this is the spirit of a boy. This is about the spirit of a boy that is unequaled in the rest of life, I think, especially with boys. It's about independence. It's about imaginary worlds. It's about living free. It's about adventure. So I've talked about this a little bit, but when I grew where I grew up, we lived in an old neighborhood, and behind our houses was this. We all had 50-foot lots that extended at least 50 feet, that extended all the way back to a fence line. And back in there was kind of a wood. I wouldn't call it woods, but it was a wood. And over the years, all the kids went back there and we had some semblance of forts back there, and we had, you know, you'd go back there and have fights back there, or you'd go back and that was a place that was utterly secure for kids. It had a magical quality to it. And I still have dreams about the yard and about that wood. And obviously, in my dreams, it is much bigger than it was, but that was a very important place for me when I was growing up. And one of the things with boys is, and I don't think we ever lose this, we always want a place that we can call our own. You know, I always wanted a fort because other kids had forts. And, you know, you would, being 11 or 12, you would raid other people's forts, other kids' forts, and try to find what was in their fort. And, you know, most of the time, the other kids' forts were basically just ramshackle boards nailed together, and they were no bigger than a person could stand. So we were boys, so they weren't that tall, and they were usually, they would fall down and be forgotten about, or you'd step on a nail or something like that. But I had a grand plan, and I'm not quite sure, and thinking about this podcast, I'm actually not sure where the grand plan originated. I don't know who came up with this idea first. But I imagine an A-frame. Now, my fort was going to be an A-frame, and it took on grand proportions, this A-frame. So I was probably 10, 11, 12, maybe. I doubt that I was younger, because I know in this place that we moved there, I know I couldn't have been less than 11 when we moved there. So I started scavenging in the neighborhood and finding wood and starting to assemble that wood in the backyard. And one day I started building the foundations of this fort. And I don't know whether my mom told my dad that he needed to help me, or maybe he thought that he needed to help or decided that he wanted to help. But let me just tell you very quickly about my dad, because it's an interesting relationship that the two of us had, because I am, I'm an extrovert. That's the only way for me to describe myself, and a hyperactive extrovert at that. Now, I know you can be hyperactive and be an introvert, but I mean, I would say my friend Lynn says she's convinced that I am, mildly autistic as well. So I was probably autistic slash hyperactive, and my mom gets very upset when I say I was autistic or slightly autistic, but I think I am in some way, shape, or form. Lynn thinks I have Asperger's syndrome. But anyway, I was hyperactive to the very least, and quite an extrovert, and I wasn't very compatible with my father. I would have to say that we didn't have much of a relationship, and this doesn't mean he didn't love me, but he had a much stronger relationship, I think, with my sister. First of all, she was his firstborn and obviously the apple of his eye, but she liked the stuff that he liked. They liked to play cards. They liked to tell stories. I don't know. They were interested in things that really didn't interest me, and we didn't have much in common. Now, I have great memories of my father, you know, when I was really little, sitting there watching him drink black coffee and smoke cigarettes, and he would take me to the Boy Scout breakfasts when I was little, because one of the things that my father valued more than anything was a good deal. And so he was the kind of guy that would negotiate for 12 hours for a used car. And if he thought he could get something for 49 cents or $1.50 or something, that was better than going to a restaurant. Now, we are completely different, because I would rather go to a restaurant than go to the Boy Scout breakfast. And I don't think I ever took my son to the Boy Scout breakfast, but we would go to the diner or whatever on Saturday mornings. But my father and I were not compatible in that sense. And that was pretty pronounced, you know, later in adolescence as well. And in young adulthood, you know, I was much closer to my mother in that sense, because we were more alike. She's artistic. I was artistic. And was he artistic? I don't know. I think he was much more of an analytical than that. But he was quiet. He was reserved. He was introverted. He processed things internally. You didn't know what was going on inside. And he was spooky in the sense that he had at least three near-death experiences in his life that I know about. And he was very smart. He had this old soul thing going on, because when he was a boy, it was said that when all the other kids would be out playing baseball and stuff like that, he would go find the oldest people in the neighborhood, and he would be found sitting on their porches talking to old people. So, and I told you that he delivered, in another podcast, he delivered groceries for my grandfather. They had a grocery store during the Depression, and he delivered. He was 12, and he would take this truck out and deliver groceries. And he used to deliver groceries to this old, well, it wasn't groceries, it was Alpo, this old hermit, as my dad called him, lived up in the woods and would eat dog food. That's what he ate. He would order a case of dog food a month, and that's what he consumed if he wasn't eating squirrels or whatever else would. But my dad would go up there and talk to the guy, and nobody else ever even had a conversation with him. So I wouldn't call my dad eccentric, but I think he was an old soul, and I think introverted. Now, you know, he knew how to have a good time, and he had an earthy sense of humor. He wasn't painfully introverted. He could certainly be social, but you get the picture of the kind of person that he was. He was not, you know, and if you know me, and if you listen to these podcasts, you kind of know that he and I were really like oil and water in that sense. And we really didn't do stuff together that much, especially as I got older. I remember helping him in the garage, he'd say, come down, you know, get me up early on a Saturday morning. And I mean, help him in the garage. I just hated that. Or he'd make me be out there and help him with the yard. I do remember that we would go buy bricks. He liked to go to this brick place on Halstead, and he liked to build patios. He was big on the building of patios. And at least once every two or three years, we had to go to the brick place or the lumber store on a Saturday morning, that sort of thing. And some people are closer to their fathers, and I think as their fathers age, they get closer to their sons. But my father died when I was 28, so that really never happened with us. In fact, he died in the full flower of my sort of late adolescent 20s independence streak. So I the one thing that I miss is maybe that little piece of being able to make peace with my father in that sense and get to know him. But back in those days, 10, 11, 12, I was pretty much on my own. Now, there were some mitigating experiences and circumstances in our family. My sister had some issues orthopedically, and she was in the hospital a lot. And somehow I remember being home alone enough to remember it and enough to recall that I loved it when they left. Some kids would have panicked at the idea of being home alone, but I loved it. And I can remember doing my laundry when I was 7 years old and learning how to cook when I was 7 years old, 8 years old. So this desire for independence first became a full flower reality probably when I was about 12. Just that first summer of being 12, 12 and a half, maybe 13. I started sleeping on the front porch, and I don't know how that came about. I'm sure the general manager of the Bob Davis podcast, my mom, would be able to tell you how that happened. But I think I secured permission to sleep on the porch all summer. And that was because mainly I stayed up all night, and I think my mom and dad and my sister were absolutely at the end of their rope because my sister and my dad were morning people. My mom was a night owl, but I was really the night owl in the family. So in the summer, they would let me sleep on the porch. It was screened in, and that, of course, that ended later. They closed in the front porch and made it part of the living room at some point, and that was all over with. And I don't really even know when that happened, but there were a couple of summers when I slept out on the porch, and what I did was I stayed up all night. And I'd listen to the radio on the front steps, and every now and then I would sneak out and walk around in the neighborhood, and it was magical. It was just sort of a wonder world. The middle of the night, summer night, deserted, the street lights casting pools of that yellow light out onto the street. And by the way, it's not the kind of yellow light that you see today, because in those days, these were just electric light bulbs, incandescent light bulbs with shades on them, and they cast a literal perfect circle, a cone of light that you'd see the insects flying around in. And occasionally, if it was misty, you'd see the mist in that cone of yellow light coming down from those street lights. And I loved summers on the porch because I could run free. And if I wanted to go outside, I would go outside. Now, most of the time, I just sat on the front steps all night and listened to WLS and just, listened to my two favorite radio stations and dreamed, you know, literally of what my life was going to be like and what I was going to do and all that. But again, there was a little sense of independence of being able to do that because when I was stuck in my room all night, I couldn't do anything. Well, what do you do when you're an 11 or 12-year-old boy? Well, at the time, you know, when we were growing up at that time, I don't think it's this way now, but we had the run of the neighborhood, especially in the summer from the time that we got up until the time that the streetlights came on. And even then, in the summer, we were allowed to hang out in front of the McCarthys as long as they knew where we were. In the morning, we left the house and we went off on our bikes and we were gone until night. And all summer long, we ran wild. I mean, we just... Parents did not hover in those days, and we did not have cell phones, and you were trusted not to get into trouble and to conduct yourself so that bad things would not happen to you. And if you did get in trouble, you were kind of on your own, and we did occasionally get into trouble. Now, as I said earlier, all boys have forts. Or at least they did then. Tree forts, if they could, because if you had a tree fort, it was concealed and you could get up in there and you could put your stuff up in there and people couldn't find it. But usually, as I said, they were boards cobbled together in backyards in some sort of ramshackle shack, or maybe in the back of a garage that nobody was using, or in some wood somewhere near or behind some houses. And boys keep treasures in their forts, much the same way that men keep treasures in their garages and their ice fishing, you know, things or whatever. And you hold meetings and you make plans and you have sleepovers if you can and that sort of thing. Now, I doubt there's too many kids sleeping in ramshackle forts in woods 3 blocks from their house because the parents wouldn't let them. But of course, when you're 12, you raid forts and you conduct raids and you plan raids because that's what it's all about. And you protect your fort if you have one. Well, I didn't have a fort and my friends didn't have one either. So we thought the coolest thing in the world would be to have a fort. Well, maybe it's because of yoga that this fort thing came to my mind because, you know, it really helps to calm me down and get in touch with that sort of voice track that's in the back of my head and pull things out to talk about that you wouldn't find in the news. And so I practice yoga a lot, and I practice yoga in crowded rooms of over 100 degrees with very high humidity and various types of yoga, which is either very, very active or, you know, you're holding poses a long time and you sweat a lot and you can get dehydrated even if you drink a lot of water. I'll give you an example. I learned recently that if you drink water, you know, before a class, it may take as much as 45 minutes for the water to actually get into your muscles and hydrate you. So being dehydrated, especially if you drink coffee and things like that, you're going to get sore. And I thought soreness went with the territory until I found something called Hydrus. And I've talked a lot about Hydrus. Hydrus has transformed my yoga practice, and I think it will do the same for you as well. Whether you cycle, do CrossFit, lift, or do competitive sports, it is a high-performance beverage that uses nanosome technology to deliver critical electrolytes with unrivaled speed and effectiveness without the sugar in traditional sports drinks. You will be hydrated pretty much as soon as you drink it, and you don't have to wait 45 minutes, and you don't get the sugar like you get in these traditional sports drink or other hydration systems. Hydrus will help you take it to the edge, which is where you grow, where you get stronger, where you get better. It doesn't matter if you walk, if you play sports, if you do CrossFit, if you do SoulCycle, if you lift, whether it's Orange Theory, any kind of yoga, join the performance hydration revolution. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com. So yeah, young boys in their forts and their desire for independence. And I don't know where this idea came from my fort, but I decided I wanted to have literally an A-frame home. I think at that point, A-frame design was pretty much the rage. And I don't know whether I came up with it or somebody said you ought to have an A-frame, or it was my dad that said you have an A-frame, or I read it in a magazine or something like that. But having an A-frame became something that I was very, very interested in. And so I decided I was going to build this thing. And let me tell you, I had a grand design in my mind of what it was going to be. It was going to have carpeting, and it was going to have skylights, which the sun would stream down, and it was going to have heat, and it was going to have a kitchen. And I mean, I wanted to build a house. And so I started going around scavenging wood, and it took weeks and months. And I don't even know when I began, but I would ask people if they had wood that they wanted to give away. And mostly I just dragged pallets from behind the IGA grocery store back to the yard. And every now and then I would find some 2x4s or some 2x6s, and it wasn't too long before I had quite a pile of wood back there. And I, you know, I might have even raided wood from other forts, you know, but I had quite a pile of wood back there. But in my mind, I just imagined that it would be this grand place. And as I said, I decided one day that I was going to build this thing. And I started working on building it. And at some point, and I don't remember when, because I don't know whether it was that he decided he was going to help or my mom told him he had to because I didn't know what I was doing. But he came out and he asked me what I was doing. So I told him what I was trying to do. And somehow it was worked out that he was going to help me. Now, I've never been a person who asks for help, and I really don't remember my reaction to him stepping in to help. And I'm actually not sure that I was very happy about it because I wanted to do this myself. I wanted this to be my thing. Around that same time, I'll give you an example. Around that same time, we went up to Diamond Lake in Michigan to visit some friends, and they had a motorboat, and they had a sailboat, and they had boys that were 15 or 16, and I was 12. And I was intimidated by these boys that were 15 or 16, and they made me do all these things just to see what I could do. And I had never water skied, and they taught me to water ski. And then that night, we sailed this sailboat over because they wanted to talk to these girls, and they got into the girls' boat. And this was a big sailboat. This was not, I mean, it seemed to me in my mind that it was a big sailboat. And they said, here's what you do. You sail this back to the house. And so I took off sailing this sailboat by myself. And I remember this tremendous sense of satisfaction that I figured this out. It took a few little things, but I figured out how to sail this boat. And I sailed it across the lake and brought it into the dock. And I remember that kid's mom was so mad at him because this thing was worth a lot of money. And I did run it up onto the rocks. It didn't damage it. But I never forgot that sense of accomplishment of being somebody just handing me something and saying, run with this. You'll figure it out. Instead of, you know, hovering over me to see how I was doing about it. And as I said, I don't remember if we started working on it that weekend, but I guess we did. And I think he may have even bought some lumber, but most of the wood for this thing was scrap. And of course, I had to help to do this. So we had four big 2x6s for the base. And then he took a bunch of other 2x6 planks that were scrap for the base of the flooring. And then we used... We did use the 2x6 planks for the flooring, and then the 2x4 somehow attached to the base, and then it came up into an A, and then I had this huge ancient 2x6 beam, and he used that to anchor the 2x4s, and the thing was, it was probably 7 feet, 8 feet high by 5 or 6 feet wide. So it was not, and then maybe 6 feet, 6.5, 8 feet long. And then he bought 2x2s that were nailed into the side to hold what was left of the crates and the pallets that I'd torn up. And those boards formed the shingles. And somehow he designed two dormer windows with shutters that would close over it so it had windows. And then we found an old door, and that was put in the front. And then we had to caulk. We used tar for caulking the shingles. And it had a second floor. It had a sleeping loft, which could fit one person. And then it was painted. And as I recall, it was whitewashed. Later on, it was gray, but it was painted white. And I had the best fort in the neighborhood. Now, I want to think about that for a minute. I just want to think and hold that thought because I had imagined this fort and the thing had been manifested. The thing that I'd started by scavenging wood and starting to try to build it myself. So I helped myself, but I needed help and I had to accept help to build the thing as independent and as stubbornly independent as I was. That wasn't something I necessarily wanted. And then my dad stepped in and helped me whether I wanted it or not, because he knew I was going to do it and I was going to end up getting hurt in the thing. And I don't think he wanted this ramshackle fort, which in itself is interesting because he was not a talker. One of his favorite saying was actions speak louder than words. Don't tell me, show me. So he was an actor. In other words, he was a person who valued action over words. And he showed me how much he loved me with that action. So that was pretty cool. That was an important lesson. And I've often thought about the relationship that we had versus the relationship that I have with my son, which is you know, I hope it's a good relationship, but I don't think that I ever helped him build a fort. You know, I don't think that I ever did anything like that. So that was pretty unique. But the fort, that was the thing, the result. And I think from the time I was 12 until I was about 15 or so, I spent as many nights in that fort as I could. And I feel like I had friends over as many nights as I could, and everybody wanted to stay over. And I remember occasionally being told that I had to sleep in the house. We had 4th of July, and the fort was great with the cherry bombs and the firecrackers. My friend Andy, I was texting with him tonight about this, and he said, I remember smoking corn cob pipes in there. And that was the whole thing about boys and their treasure. And of course, we stole some pipe tobacco from the IGA or God knows well, the Jewel or someplace like that. And we had these corn cob pipes, and we would sit there and smoke our corn cob pipes or smoke cigars or cigarettes. And, you know, we'd talk and make plans, or we would sneak out. And we all actually, or we did sneak out a lot. And we'd sneak over to Gail Wisniewski's house, who came out once, as I recall, and went back in. And then I managed to find an extension cord from my dad's electric lawnmower, which was about 2 feet wide. And he'd make me mow that lawn, that 50-foot deep lot with that stupid lawnmower, which he bought at a garage sale for $10. You know, and that was made him just so happy that he could have bought that lawnmower. And I can't tell you how many times I ran over that plug mowing that lawn. But I took the extension cord from the plug and plugged it into the garage and then strung it out to the fort. So we had electricity, which means lighting and my stereo. And the thing was waterproof and fairly weatherproof, which is pretty cool because you'd sit out there. I would actually leave the house and go out to the fort in an afternoon thunderstorm because it was so great to just be in there by yourself during a huge thunderstorm. And we used, I mentioned the tar to caulk it, so it was waterproof. Well, pretty waterproofed anyway. I didn't necessarily do podcasts to tell this story. I decided to talk about this. I didn't want to make a podcast about this necessarily just to tell stories about the fort. I decided to talk about this because this is one of those things that came up while I was drinking coffee in the morning the other day. Maybe it is the approach of spring. Maybe it's fatigue with the BS that goes on for news these days. And maybe it's just straight up nostalgia and dreams about this. But I think the reason that that fort comes up again and again in my dreams and impinges on my consciousness every now and then is the sense of independence and freedom that it gave me, that my father and mother gave me by helping and by supporting the idea of the fort and by allowing me to be that free and trusting me to be that free. I would wake up in there, even when I hung out by myself, and I would feel utterly at peace. In fact, I remember one fall evening, right after we built it, so it was a bit would have been that summer, I went out there and climbed up there and rolled myself up in the blankets and fell asleep, and they were really worried. And when I woke up, it was dark, and I went in there, and they were like, "Where have you been?" And I was like, "I fell asleep in the fort," and I was, you know, because I felt so peaceful and wonderful. So the fort was surrounded by these big old trees, probably elms, and right next door to the fort, like literally butt up against it, was an old garage that had probably been built in the 20s that went with the next door neighbor's house. And I loved those big old trees because they secluded the fort. Now, the old guy next door finally sold his house. I don't remember his name. And the new guy moved in and he needed a big garage because he was a contractor. And he had trucks and stuff that he parked on a big driveway back there. And the biggest old oak tree back there, whatever it was, elm tree, leaned out into his property in back of the old garage. And so it had to go. Now, I've often mentioned that I'm just fascinated with the 1920s, but this little area back there, and I guess sitting back there by that old 1920s garage and those trees, I always felt like it, you know, it was back in the 20s. I kind of had this sense of timeless sense sitting back there. There were a bunch of logs you could sit on, and it was behind the garage, both our garage and their garage, and so it was really secluded. And the day that they came to cut the tree down, I remember I climbed the tree to prevent them from cutting it down because I didn't want them to cut that tree down. And my mom had to come out, and my dad had to come out and tell me to climb down, and I wouldn't do it. And But anyway, I finally came down out of the tree and they cut it down and they cut down the others. And he built his big giant garage right there. And I guess I would say it kind of ruined the sense of independence and freedom of being isolated back there for me. But it could have been that I was getting older and the fort didn't have the same savoir faire for a 15-year-old or a 14-year-old that it did for a 10 or 11 or 12-year-old. And I also was in high school and I was starting to work at the high school radio station. And so it was, you know, probably just adolescence. But I remember I think my sister had her 21st birthday in the backyard and we turned the fort into a bar. So my friend Andy came up from Arizona and we bartended from inside the fort. And we had to have been at least 15 or 16 by that time. And I remember we got drunk on slow gin fizzes. He got really drunk on slow gin fizzes because he had to keep testing the slow gin fizzes to make sure they were okay. And after that, the fort was kind of, I'm not going to say it was off limits, but, you know, you get your driver's license and off you go and you start doing all these other different things. And I would go back there and sit and kind of look at some things still in there. I still had the little treasure chest with stuff in it. I know the sleepovers ended probably before high school, but I remember it as, I remember my friend John and I drove up to Wisconsin because he was 18 and we bought a case of Old Style and sat out there and drank it warm. We drank a case of warm beer. And of course I got drunk and my dad came out and I had to go upstairs. And I puked out the window and I woke up the next day to my dad spraying down the siding. And when I came downstairs, he said, he didn't say much. When I came downstairs, I thought I was going to get yelled at. And he said, "Want a beer? There's beer in the refrigerator." And it kind of made me sick again. So the fort just kind of petered out and served its purpose. And every few years, over the years, I would go back to my hometown and I would walk my neighborhood, which always seems like a museum, you know, because when you're growing up, you're smaller and everything is huge. The world is a huge expanse. And when you're full grown, you go back to your neighborhood and it feels much smaller. So it's kind of neat. And I would walk up the driveway of the old house. And every time I go back, I do this because I usually go through the neighborhood in the middle of the night. And so I walk right into the backyard. And the fort was always still there, and I always felt good because it was still there. And I'm sure it had lawn crap in it and, you know, lawnmowers and stuff like that. But not too long ago, I went back there and again went out into the backyard, and the fort was gone. But it lives in my memory as a symbol of the feeling of freedom and independence, which was in some form real freedom and independence, which can only be felt that way, really, when you're a young boy who has been set free for the first time. And I do dream of it. I still kind of want an A-frame. And the last time I felt that sense of freedom, oddly enough, was when I was on the road earlier this year on the campaign trail in Mobile Podcast Command. And I remember feeling that same sense of freedom and adventure waking up in my hammock in Mobile Podcast Command. So maybe the man is not too far from the boy. Just a reminder, you guys have heard me talk about Hydrus. If you want to get some, this is what you do. You visit HydrusPerformance.com, H-Y-D-R-U-S, HydrusPerformance.com. Lots of information and content on this site about what Hydrus is and what it does. HydrusPerformance.com. And thanks again to Brush Studio for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Again, for client appreciation, this is a great social, memorable thing to do. And you can check them out at brushstudio.net or click on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcasts.com. Or you can call them. Let me grab the number here real quick. 952-236-1700. 952-236-1700. They are event planning ninjas. So you and your clients are going to have a great time. And thanks you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Thanks to the digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com, Alpha Systems. They're just back from Orlando, where they were demonstrating Alpha Systems at one of the big air shows. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is, on final approach, it's great to have a visual indicator of your angle of attack. It makes all the difference in the world. It's FAA approved. Alpha Systems started the AOA revolution. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Now, I do have to do a disclaimer, which is that I know the general manager of the Bob Davis podcast is not going to be happy about the drinking stories, because I can just hear her, "Oh, Bob, why did you have to ruin it by telling me?" Because, you know, you grow up and you have this, you know, I am so happy that I got to have that experience, because it was a great lesson learned, that nothing really of any value is ever achieved without dreaming it first and putting out some effort to try to bring it into being. But you need help too, and you need to be willing to accept help, because you can't do everything yourself. And this is something that I have to tell myself again and again and again. And the other thing is, and then I'll be done, I got to mention this, because this is one of the main reasons I wanted to do this podcast. When you're an adult, you know, you think a lot about things you didn't do, and you think a lot about, I should have done it this way, and I should have done. We all have regrets. It's just part of life. And sometimes, and I think this is probably true with a lot of people, sometimes you just have it all, and you realize from an experience like that, you really don't need much to really truly be happy and independent and free. It wasn't money, it wasn't some toy, it wasn't the best bike ever, or anything like that. It was the experience of building that thing with my dad and having that, even if it was for maybe that year and a half period when I really, really used it and enjoyed it, and it was so special, and I had the coolest fort in town. So sometimes you don't really need that much to have and be wealthy. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show at AM 1280 The Patriot, and also at GCNLive.com. And I really appreciate your comments and likes and shares and favorites on Facebook and Twitter. And thanks for following me on Instagram as well. I'm BDavis7843 on Instagram, which is snark-free. And again, thanks for your donations at the Bob Davis Podcast .com for Mobile Podcast Command. We're getting ready to go out, and it is a getting ready to get ready, because I have to steel myself to get back out and cover politics again, but I think I'm going to wait until after the conventions when the actual campaign gets going. But Mobile Podcast Command will be out and doing other things this summer, so keep listening and I'll tell you where. Anyway, thank you for listening to Podcast 484, the Bob Davis Podcasts.